So how are you?
Very good.
And where are you calling? Where are we talking from?
Well, I am in the UK in a place called Teddington, which is on the Thames. It's about 10 or 11 miles from the centre of London. We're in Greater London, as we call it over here.
So are you touring right now?
I'm touring right now, yeah. I'm in the middle of a tour. I've got a day off. This is my first day off for a while. We're doing 31 dates up and down the UK, the longest tour I've ever done in the UK. Because
wow.
The UK is only a little place compared to where you are. But it's been great to do these shows. And I've got a day off, which is absolutely, absolutely marvelous, frankly.
Lovely. Well, I appreciate you talking with us. Thanks for doing this. It's great to talk to you.
It's a pleasure.
So how has touring been going? How does it feel to be back on the road and back playing in front of your fans?
The schedule that we're doing would be punishing for a 19-year-old. But I'm far from that, as you know. It's easier because, you know, when I was first touring 50 years ago, and I've been touring now for 50 years, what I used to do was I would party every night, you know, and so you'd wake up every day with a hangover, feeling like death, getting up on stage. But, you know, when you're a certain age, you can get away with it and still look fresh. Whereas now I have to be extremely observant of bodily limitations.
Right.
I could play better than I could play then. But I can't party as hard as I used to. And maybe it's just as well, frankly.
And tell us about your shows. What can fans expect when they come to one of your shows?
Well, at the moment, what we're doing is, before lockdown, we advertised we were going to do the whole of Seconds Out. Genesis album, 1977, an album that Cherry picked across the whole of the band's history up to that point. So it's the pre-Genesis MTV era that I'm playing, that which fans refer to as classic Genesis rather than Jurassic Genesis, the days when Peter Gabriel was the lead singer.
Yep.
And then a couple of albums where Phil Collins became the lead singer for the first time of the band. So he'd been singing lead with the band for 2 years at that point. And then we did Seconds Out, was the live album. The album that I chose was going to be my swan song with the band. So I basically left as that album was being mixed. I was extremely concerned about doing solo work, working with other people other than Genesis. Brilliant though they were, it was becoming extremely restricting, and I wasn't allowed to have a parallel solo career. Tony and Mike were extremely against that, but nonetheless, you know, you can't keep a good man down. My allegiance is to music rather than any one particular flag or band. I have to go where my muse points me. And, you know, whether that's rock and roll or whether it's stuff that's classically inspired, acoustic guitar or electric guitar, you know, so somewhere between jazz rock and classical, I guess you might say somewhere between Hendrix meets Segovia. You think about blues, all of the sonic developments that really happened within rock guitar happened around blues. Blues was the stamping ground of that. That was where blues got to cut its teeth and guitars learned to scream. But then there was the world of harmony that had really come out of folk music and classical music and all the rest and jazzers. And suddenly it all came together. Sometime in the 1960s, people realized that the shackles were off and that you could do anything. You could do anything in rock at that time. No one was producing hit singles. No one was particularly interested in having hit singles at that time. Musicians were were making albums. The era of Led Zeppelin, of Pink Floyd, etc. You know, these were not, you know, bands that you went to find a hit single. So, you know, subsequently, of course, classic rock radio will take a song like, you know, something of Pink Floyd from Dark Side of the Moon or whatever it is, or Another Brick in the Wall. And these things have never needed to be hit singles. They're just iconically great within themselves. And so they become, these tracks become more famous than singles. Everyone else is lining up to get their hit single, and at a certain point in the 1980s, to be MTV friendly enough. And I think, unfortunately, Genesis tended to sort of sacrifice their creativity on the altar of MTV friendly work at the expense of the acceptable odyssey that was the album. Albums in themselves were game changers. The point where the Beatles became truly interesting, suddenly music had changed. There was a sort of emphasis on things other than, you know, the four mop tops doing something that was going to please in 2 or 2.5 minutes. You know, by the time you got Sgt. Pepper, the album is the single. There's no longer any distinction. At that point, I think, you know, perhaps it moved on. By the time you could embrace albums like a kind of lifestyle, you had Carole King with Tapestry. I know I'm going back a long way. If you spent a lifetime in music, as I have, not just my professional lifetime, but you know, 20 years before that, while I was, you know, waiting in the wings and struggling to get out of the cot, music was always hugely important to me, whether it was listening to Mario Lanza singing the drinking song from The Student Prince, or listening to Gluck. I didn't really sort of, there was no distinction between what was classical and what was pop music at the time. All these eras had their constraints, you know, but I'll go back to Baroque music and find it very liberating, and think of it as extraordinarily romantic in a time when they were forced to do their hit singles. Perhaps, you know, where the metronome tended to rule the roost. But hey, you know, music's on the change, and every now and again, it, you know, it bites through chains and shakes off the shackles, and something new will come along that isn't necessarily all built on a winning smile. But I think music ought to be challenging. Perhaps music should be a kind of compelling Hunchback of Notre Dame, perhaps. That's how I basically see it. You know, that you can have music that's, you know, both ugly, but at the same time, winning. That's how I see it. I'm ambitious for music itself to win the day. It's lovely. Yeah, obviously, you know, when it's young guys who are as beautiful as the young Elvis and all that, you know, that's something that's always going to engage an audience. But the beauty of music itself, you know, if I could talk to Socrates about this, maybe he'd understand what I'm talking about.
Are there any musicians that you currently like today?
Yeah, I love the work of Joe Bonamassa, reinventing the blues, because he can, you know, waltz in and out of what's traditional with the other stuff. I mean, it's not romantic, but it's extraordinarily inventive. So the Brits have all embraced him to the degree where we sort of think of him as the new Hendrix. You know, he's an American who isn't making waves in America as much as making waves in Britain. But, you know, but to have the Jimi Hendrix effect, of course, the goalposts have shifted since then, but it's no less engaging in so many ways, and I've met him a couple of times and complimented him on his work, and he's done a little bit of a reinterpretation of a Genesis riff from time to time. I like his work. I befriended, you know, one of the guys from Elbow, another British band, which is a very interesting Guy Garvey, who's become as much as of a presenter on a TV and radio as he has as a kind of band leader. Interesting work, The Seldom Seen Kid, very interesting album. So, you know, I guess, you know, there's one American and there's one Brit, but they seem to have an overview of everything. I mean, there's a very young picture of Joe Bonamassa sitting there with B.B. King. I think Joe was about 8 years old and B.B. King's sort of, you know, showing him a lick or two on guitar, and you get the feeling of that there's the candle being handed over.
Any other guitar heroes?
Well, actually, Segovia. I always loved the way Segovia played. And so, you know, out of the classical repertoire, you've got Segovia. There's Paco de Lucia. There's Paco Peña, you know, of flamenco. It goes right back to Hank Marvin with me. Hank Marvin with the Shadows. I will always be influenced by other guitarists. Terrible to see the passing of Eddie Van Halen and also Peter Green. Peter, of course, with early Fleetwood Mac, and before that, John Mayall's Blues Breakers. I used to go and see Peter playing sometimes once every 2 weeks, every fortnight. I would go and see him play, and what a brilliant sound and approach that he had at that time before he became a pop star in a way. I don't think he wanted to be that. At the end of the day, you know, there are guys who can really do it, and there's others that you know, might appear to have all the credentials, but are players going to go out of their way and go and see them and watch them? Our answer is probably no. I'm interested in a lot of other players, that's for sure. Many of them are no longer young or even with us in this world. But
well, tell us about your new record.
The latest album is called Surrender of Silence. It's a very unromantic record. It's the second studio album I've released in the past year. First of all, I did an album called Under a Mediterranean Sky, which was basically all nylon guitar, all acoustic, all very gentle stuff. It's not attempting to be modern in any sense of the word, but it is cinematic and romantic and all the rest. And I just, when I do an acoustic album, I just try and make it as beautiful as possible. That's it. So, you know, when I first started doing acoustic albums, I tried to do stuff that was perfect for siestas. The idea that you might just drift off with this stuff with a glass of wine. And that was enough for me. It didn't have to be technique based. Then as I started to do more and more shows again, after a hiatus of some 7 years or so, the music business was reorganizing itself. At the point when artists started to have their own labels and people started to get interested once again in you know, what was good about progressive stuff. Once you reach your mid-30s, something starts to happen. You know, you're no longer pop star material. Something else, something takes over, and it brings you back to what engaged you in the first place. So the music itself is the star. I am not the star. I've got nothing to do with it whatsoever. Any music that I've done over the course of my lifetime, whether it's with Genesis or GTR or stuff on my own, whether it charts or not, I think really what I'm working towards is the idea of legacy and heritage and all the rest. And I think of, you know, a lot of classical composers who had, you know, a terrible time in the course of their own lifetimes. I guess it's the Van Gogh effect, you know. It's the romantic artist thing, isn't it? It's like, what are you making it for? Are you trying to do it, you know, try and fit in with today's current formats, or are you involved in a game-changing thing that at the end of the day, you know, like, oh, forget who this guy is, and what he looks like, what he dances like, what his trousers are like, you know, whether he's got hair or not. And the truth is that it's all about, you know, what was the quality of the work? Does the quality of the work survive its the time that you're born in? So luckily I'm able to kind of tap dance between the two. I'm still around. I'm still doing shows. Very happy to do that. Very proud of doing that. I don't want to spend my life trying to write songs in the hope that Celine Dion might like it or and record it. I don't want to play the game. I don't really care whether Beyoncé decides that she wants to become a dance version of what I've done or any current crop of musicians, because I find it very, you know, driven by all sorts of other considerations. The perfect song is the perfect perfume ad, the perfect length of skirt, how the highlights in the hair are set, etc. And doesn't she dance well and all the rest? Great voice, but I haven't heard a single song that I would think is worthy of the power of the voice that she's got. You know, non-compliance is where we should be headed, because if we don't start the revolution, we lose the world to fire, blood, famine, all the rest. We need the protest songs. We need so much more than just going along with it and being wonderful and getting a diamond put in your teeth and all the rest of, you know, it. You've got to be more than just the image for me to listen. Maybe there, you know, other listeners and all the rest, that's fine for them, but I want so much more for music that should be vital and could literally save the planet at the moment.
So what's next for you? Is there anything else you're going to do on that note?
Yeah. Whilst I was busy saving the planet, he said, hit of irony. So yeah, there are songs on Surrender of Silence that address climate change, poverty, all the rest. And for all those who are getting turned off by that, I would say, well, yeah, okay. Yeah, you could say my job was to entertain. But at the same time, the most entertaining music I found were the ones that had engaging melodies with interesting messages. Mm-hmm. The young Bob Dylan Take Note, Blowing in the Wind. Has anyone done anything that great since then? And Eleanor Rigby, courtesy of the Beatles, circa 1965, 66. So I want rather more from music than just everyone to come up with hey, the next hit, here we go, it goes boom, 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 boom. You know, I want so much more than that from music. And yet, will we get it from this era? All I can say is that I'm trying my very best to deliver the kind of music that I want to hear from other people, and I don't quite hear from other people.
You have a book out too, right?
Yeah. The book is called A Genesis in My Bed. The book is an autobiography. It's as honest as I can possibly make it. I grew up in the 1950s, and then music was around in the 1960s when I was a teenager, trying to break into the music business. And then by the time I was 20, I met Genesis. And then it's a whole lot about what Genesis was all about. You know, this obscure band that played clubs and colleges and became a sort of, you know, a world-class act. And I think we were very unlikely movers and shakers, frankly.
Yeah.
We used to think we were very lucky to have gotten in, you know, just in time, perhaps, when music was on the change. We were very lucky. We were lucky to be able to indulge our passions, I think.
Do you still see the guys?
You know, I would love to say that I do. The honest thing is, I last saw Peter Gabriel about 2 years ago, before lockdown, of course, you know, because we've all been in hibernation in a sense. I haven't been able to see any of their live shows because I'm touring at exactly the same time they are touring in the UK. And they're doing rather less shows in rather larger venues, but we're probably playing to the same amount of people. I'm doing 31 shows. The biggest tour I've ever done, up and down the UK. And they're playing arenas. You know, I gave up arenas. I got tired of playing places where the sound was terrible every night, and it all just sounded like, you know, like you were playing in Paddington Station, or like in lane number one, boom, it's okay. You know, the reverb is louder than the note. Anytime anyone does anything on drums, it's going, you know, you cannot play, you can't play a precise music like that. And I thought, to hell with this. I like the sound of theatres, where I think the sound is at its best.
Rock Hall of Fame, did that mean anything to you?
Yeah, it did. I think it's a great institution. I love the fact that it's that you guys, the Americans, you know, have instituted this thing which not only celebrates current artists, but classic artists from way back. It's not ageist, and it also celebrates the writers, the brains behind the songs that we grew up with as adolescents, thinking about, and then she kissed me, or I kissed her, and you know, it's like back to the days of the first party I went to, and I put my arm around a girl, and she didn't run away. Yeah, you know, the song that addresses that, and the writers that wrote that stuff. For me, it's hugely important that adolescence is celebrated, as well as old gits like myself.
And your wife has written a couple of lyrics for you. Is that true?
Yeah, much more than that. Yeah, she's written quite a few. I do write on my own, but I also write with her. And there's no separation between the two. And to be honest, I only do stuff that she approves of anyway. I've empowered her to that degree because I know that she is very, very passionate about music. And she grew up learning the violin as a child and inventing melodies and various things. She came from a very musical family. Her father played violin, her grandfather violin. She always felt that growing up listening to classical music, that she could imagine films being made to this music. And indeed, she made films when she grew up. And we've done films and books and things together. She's a very, very artistic, self-deprecating person. Mm-hmm. You know, if I said she was a genius, she would get embarrassed, but she is. So if you like anything that I've done, it's been with her guiding hand and her love, and she is quite wonderful. And any ladies out there who are listening, do not be threatened by that. I think that, you know, a woman's influence can be extraordinary and extraordinarily positive, can be also extraordinarily destructive, but women, I think, really do have the upper hand because they have the intuition that we as men and boys very much lack.
I'll make sure to tell my husband that.
Indeed, yeah, just show him this and hey, that guy, you know, he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, you know.
Well, Steve, it's been an honor and a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time, and good luck with the rest of the tour.
Stay well, stay healthy, and get jabbed, wear a mask, don't die. We love you, okay?
Love you too, Steve. Keep on doing what you're doing.
All the best. Ciao. Thank you.